Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And today we're going to delve into who we are. Who are the members of the Gemstone Mine crew? How did we get into the game? And how do we approach the game? But before we get into that, you know what we have to talk about first. There's some news to talk about. And boy, is there some news to talk about this time. So there's a series that's made its way through television and comics called The Walking Dead, which unveils not really the horror of monsters that surround humanity, but more the horrible dark side of humanity itself. And for a lot of us, we just got to see this play out in real life with a release of a secret lair celebrating this particular series, The Walking Dead. Jake, why don't you tell us a little bit about this secret lair drop?
It is destroying the internet as we speak. Now, so it's, you know, it's a secret lair. I think there's five cards in it. They're all mechanically unique, brand new cards, so not any reprints like previous secret lairs. And they are all themed after Walking Dead characters, which I honestly don't know anything about. So they're like five different people that are in different colors and do things that are not on any other Magic card currently.
I think it's a bit more than five, because they said they have a bit more to release, but the full set won't be released until this evening after an episode of The Walking Dead on The Talking Dead, which is their after-show podcast or whatever.
Oh, boy.
So I think there's more than just the five. I think it's going to be like somewhere in the neighborhood of like eight or ten, maybe.
Now, the thing that has a lot of us concerned, and Jake, you touched on it, was that these are mechanically unique cards. Now, this is not a new thing for Wizards to do in celebrating promos. For example, we have had Transformer crossovers with Grimlock. We have had My Little Pony crossovers. But the difference there was that these promotional cards were always silver-bordered. These, however, are black-bordered, which means that as of the Secret Lair drop on October 5th, they are going to be legal in Eternal formats like Commander.
I mean, I can see the indignation of feeling that, you know, you're printing unique formats on cards that are pretty much just FOMO, fear of missing out, and they're not always accessible to anybody. But let me get to counter that. Wizards also said, hey, if any of these turn out to be popular, not just kind of, you know, shiny pieces of cardboard, that they'd be willing to reprint those same effects in the actual Magic universe outside of, you know, the Walking Dead cards and Secret Lair. So, they're listening to some degree.
I'm looking at it as a very blatant cash grab, where they are printing cards directly into the reserve list, effectively. And it's, I don't know, if they wanted to do a promo, they already have the existing technology, either silver bordered, like John has mentioned, and then there's also the Godzilla frame that they did in Ikoria, where they could have just printed these as Magic cards that were reflavored as these characters. But, yeah, so it's just something that I think is a little skeezy. But it is a company, and doing company things.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on the skeezy comment. The obvious fear with this would be something like, if they have success here, and they're going to say, now we're open to releasing mechanically unique cards through a secret lair drop, the fear of what if we get our next Arcane Signet that is printed in a secret lair drop. That type of thing is my personal fear with it, less so that we have kind of these weird, unique, very niche commanders being printed, and more that we have potentially important cards for the format being printed in this type of a setting. And the FOMO, the fear of missing out approach with these secret lair drops, where you have one opportunity to get them and then they're gone forever. Yeah, that's worse than the reserve list in terms of accessibility.
And the game is already pretty difficult to get into if you're doing anything other than like just standard or draft, which honestly is where Wizards of the Coast would want you to play anyway, because they get the most pack purchases. But any of like the Eternal formats, like Commander, when you try to go deep in them, it is getting to be completely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, and that's not to say that Secret Lair is bad. Like, they've had some good ones up to this point. I think this just might be a misstep that they've had in terms of, let's branch out and bring other IPs into this, because Secret Lairs have been solid up until this point. Maybe not everything we've wanted, and there could have been chances to put, you know, better cards in there, but I mean, they've been good products.
Secret Lair in general, in my eyes, has been kind of that nice side grade that's available to people who are collectors who want something unique and special for their decks, where I do have the opportunity to say, all right, my slime deck, my ooze deck, I'm going to get this really cool secret lair drop with these really cool arts that no one else is going to have. And they don't take away from the person who does just want to find the cheapest versions of cards and put them in a deck to have something very functional at a table. I think that is fine. The collector edition cards that are coming out now for modern sets, they keep the prices of other staples fairly low and make them more accessible to more people, and that's a pretty good thing, I think. But, again, mechanically unique cards in a secret lair, that worries me.
Yeah. But, I mean, we'll see in the coming months whether or not this is something that repeats. If those mechanics are already existent on Magic Universe cards that we'll see sometime, maybe in Call Time or in Strixhaven afterwards. Or in Commander Legends, who knows? Speaking of Commander Legends...
Well, before we move on to Commander Legends, I wanted to actually talk about the Rules Committee's response to this. So the Commander Rules Committee had heard the outcry pretty much immediately, and their initial response was, we are not going to ban anything on the secret lair of The Walking Dead. However, Sheldon and the rest of the Rules Committee then opened up a poll, which kind of showed pretty overwhelmingly people wanted to have these cards banned from the format to send a message to Wizards of the Coast. There were a number of problems that we're not going to get into with the rules, with the secret lair drop in general. A lot of people had a problem with Negan being a morally dubious person with a lot of baggage that his presence on a card brings to the table. Just the idea of bringing non-Magic IPs onto the table. At the end of the day, though, the Rules Committee took several days, listened to comments from the community, and then published a statement on October 2nd saying that at the end of the day, we recognize that all of these things are a problem. We've heard what you've said. We're not going to ban any of these cards. We think that banning the cards would do more harm than good, but we're going to use our position to bring your concerns to Wizards and try to amplify your voices. I personally thought that the Rules Committee handled this well. As much as I don't want to see cards like this entering the format, or I guess more appropriately, I don't want to see cards entering our format in this way, I personally think the Rules Committee's approach was pretty solid and level-headed. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, they have members of Wizards of the Coast on the Rules Committee now as well, so it's not one of those things where, you know, we'll make sure Wizards here won't communicate. There are members of the Wizards team on the Rules Committee. So there should be a much clearer open line of dialogue between the Rules Committee and Wizards of the Coast.
You could say it's an open line of dialogue, or you could say it's a conflict of interest of having the Rules Committee go, no, we're not going to ban these cards in an exclusive collector's product because that would hurt the Wizards' bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I might be on the opposite end. I don't really see a need for them to be banned. If you want them that badly, find a way to get them. If not, then don't. There are plenty of cards, especially as you move from, you know, casual commander to more tuned to competitive, that there are cards that, you know, make the decks work that are outpriced for it. So it wouldn't be like, oh, there's a price when we can't get our hands on these cards. There are tons of online marketplaces, and it may be a premium price for them, but there are also premium prices for EDH cards and Magic cards that we play commonly now that, you know, we have our own copies of, we don't think twice about it. But someone just getting to the format wanting to try something, you know, would be, you know, balking at, you know, looking at our mana bases and things of that nature, looking at how much the cards they spent for that as compared to, you know, picking up a new commander.
Yeah, and I don't think that is a good thing. I don't think that's the way we should have
a
format. We shouldn't be like, hey, these cards are really expensive, so go get your own.
Yeah,
go get your own.
But that's what we have now. But, I mean, that's what the reserve lifts, and that's what, you know, Wizards is kind of made of, you know, where this format goes.
Yeah, we're going to be waiting and seeing with the rest of you and seeing what the outcome of this is. But the other thing, Alex, that you alluded to that we're waiting on is Commander Legends being pushed back.
We have to wait a little bit longer than we already had to.
So we got pushed back to November 20th for the release date for Commander Legends. Production and shipping delays were what I believe Wizards is citing for this one. It's kind of sad because this would have been a really fun format to draft in person at our friendly local gaming store. But I think so far the three of us are still going to be staying away from large gatherings. even if it's going to be a fairly small gathering, just from the public health standpoint, we're waiting till the end of the pandemic, once we have a solution, to get back out there and go enjoy face-to-face magic again as opposed to video
magic.
So
do we want to try our hand at predicting the future again and see if any of the mechanics from the Walking Dead cards somehow make their way into Commander Legends?
It's like, I think it's way too early for that. Like, they wouldn't
we
know.
Need,
yeah,
we need a backlash.
Yeah, the time... Because
they have the backlash.
The timelines don't line up in any way, shape, or form. The secret lairs tend to be just... They usually just need art for them. So the production pipeline on that is like months, whereas the production pipeline for Commander Legends, we know, is like 4 years.
I'm just wondering if they're struggling to put anything else in there.
No. I think that is... change your tinfoil hat out.
I mean, it's fun to just theorize about. I mean, it's highly unlikely, but I wouldn't be as surprised as I would be in the past if something like that did happen.
Now, if they push it back a year, maybe then I would buy it, but not a week.
Yeah, I don't think that those mechanics were just spun up for these cards specifically. I think they existed in some capacity. Time will tell.
Yep. And then we have one other piece of news. As we announced last week, we have started recording some videos. So no gameplay videos yet, but I did release our first video on our YouTube channel. I apologize for the relatively low video quality on it. This was my first dabbling into trying to make video content. And we talked about our Staples Binder system on this one. So I will be releasing another video next week, hopefully of slightly higher quality. But stay tuned for that one, as this is going to be our first episode where we're going to be going to our bi-weekly recording for the full audio episode.
And Staple Binders, you came up with that system, at least the way you have it. I utilize it as well. I love it. It makes life super easy. And I have a tendency to just want to shrink my collection as much as possible. So the least amount of places I have to have cards and keep track of things, the better. And the Staple system helps a lot with that.
All right. Our next section then is games we've played. So anybody got any games in since our last session?
I have not played Magic in over 2 weeks, so nope.
I can talk about Brawl and Zendikar Rising Draft on Arena.
Well, I got 3 games of CEDH in over last weekend, which actually proved pretty fun. I played with some friends who, Jake, you introduced me to. It was a couple pretty good games. I got to play Yuriko Turbonaws, so playing the blue-black ninja commander as basically a source of card draw, and then winning through Demonic Consultation, Thassa's Oracle lines. Won 2 out of the 3 games, both times basically just sneaking in and saying, okay, you guys tapped out and spent all of your interaction. Do you have anything left to stop me? No? Okay, I guess I win. And then the third game, we just kind of, I fell way too far behind. But still, it was fun. It was fun to see that the slower, grindier, more mid-range meta that that group plays in was not in a really great place to try to stop a fast deck like Yuriko.
Oh, that's where most competitive decks have been heading towards recently anyways, is the grindy mid-range with the farm decks and the different Zerta decks and the advantage decks out there, all more mid-range based.
The more recent push that I've been seeing has been to faster decks as the mid-range was taking over, where decks are now trying to get in under it and use the combination of Ad Nauseam and Jake's favorite card from Core 2021, Peer into the Abyss, to draw your deck and then win on the spot.
I'm really looking forward
really interesting
to
format.
Somebody using Peer into the Abyss so you can deflecting swat it. That's going to be backbreaking. It's one reason why it has not become my favorite card, just because that blowout potential is pretty sad.
High risk, high reward is the way to live. All right, so what do you guys say we get into our main topic then and talk about who we are? So why don't we start at the beginning, as it were? So, how did you guys get into Magic?
All right. I don't remember how old I was, but it was when Ice Age was coming out. There was this kid in one of my classes. Hi, Nick, in case somehow you wind up listening to this. He was playing, and he very poorly explained the rules to a couple of us, and everybody in the, that was in that little group started playing. None of us had any idea what we were doing. There was a mixture of bad understanding of the rules, and I'm pretty sure blatant cheating, but we still managed to have some fun. there was a long time before any of us fully read the text on Sea Singer. At the time, we thought it was just like tap, take everything and sacrifice it all. I don't know why. The card doesn't say anything like that.
Didn't you guys play with the mistaken rule of sacrifice is just a thing you can always do?
Yeah, there was that. And then land drop, I think, where you can play as many lands on your first turn as you want. So we would routinely like drop four or five forests in our Crawworm decks. So, you know, just really dumb stuff. Yeah, so that's how I started.
What about you, Alex?
It was my buddy Dave's house, and he invited a bunch of us over one day just to play Magic. And once again, this is very similar. Apparently, when you learn Magic, you learn about the game. You don't learn any of the rules or anything like that. And yeah, we were just playing with a whole bunch of his quote-unquote pre-con decks that just had the same the land the just player hands out for lands and all that. It was just a whole bunch of just like burn decks. So it just had lava axes going everywhere. There were some elves, some goblins. Blue wasn't even at the table, so I don't know what was going on. But that was like that was the first time I was introduced to the concept that Magic was in fact a card game. And then a bit later on, I was at the local card shop and I saw it. And this was right around the time Onslaught came out, and that was my first foray into it. Is, you know, buying packs with Onslaught. Opening Ixidor, the Reality Sculptor, was my first rare pull of any Magic card. I still have my original Ixidor, actually. So,
a little bit of sentimental value there for you.
You know, there was that small resurgence with Morph cards and Commander not that long ago. So that was it proved worth holding on to.
All right, so I got started around the same time that Jake did, and I have a very similar story to Jake where one of my friends in class, I'll say hi, Brian, if somehow you're listening to this, introduced me to the game by giving me a Chronicles Cat Warriors.
Yikes.
And he handed me that card, and I said, cool, can you teach me how to play? And he said, you can't, you don't have enough cards. Well, can't you just teach me, like, with what's going on? He says, sure. Okay, first, you draw 7 cards from your deck. I pick up the one card that I have, and I say, well, this is all I have. He says, okay, you lose, bye.
Nice.
Mill.
And then walks away with his cards and leaves me standing there. So, seeing this cool art on the card, I talked to some people and found out where I could buy more of them. And I begged my parents for money so I can go buy a 4th edition starter deck. So, if you guys remember, these starter decks were not pre-constructed decks. These were literally packs of like 40 cards with 20 basic lands of all 5 colors and one, I think one rare, maybe 3 rares, a handful of uncommons and a bunch of commons. So I bought a 4th edition starter pack and then a couple weeks later an Ice Age starter pack. And I remember that by the time I started playing, I was very excited to pull a card that looked really powerful called Channel. It was already banned by the time I opened it. And I'm pretty sure the rest of the cards I got were pretty much garbage at the time. But kind of played it for a little bit around that time, but it was around Mirage, Visions, Weatherlight, and Tempest that started playing with a larger group of friends and really got into the game, which leads me into my next question. Did you guys ever take a break from Magic after you got started with it?
Yeah, I've taken a couple breaks from it. I'm trying to remember when exactly they were. I think I should probably have pulled up like a set list.
While yeah. You look, I stopped right after the Time Spiral block. And I remember that because I lived in Orlando at the time, and I remember opening multiple Tarmogoyfs and just looking at this card. I'm like, what is this card? And then stupidly getting rid of them. But I stopped after that site, and I didn't come back until Return to Ravnica. So,
Okay.
So that was your long gap.
Yeah, it was my long, which is unfortunate because looking back in that time frame of sets that I missed, like I think I would have absolutely loved to have played through Alara when it was actually there, and obviously Zendikar, because Zendikar to this day is probably one of the most, the second most, if not the most influential plane of Magic that the entire series have, you know, second only to maybe Dominaria.
So did you pretty much play consistently other than that one break?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, what so I pulled you, up a list on Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. So, like I mentioned, I started in Ice Age. I remember playing through, like, Homelands, Alliances, buying a lot of booster packs of Alliances for some reason, trying to get the Balduvian Horde, because, you know, that was what Inquest said was the best card at the time. Played through, I think, around the Mirage and Tempest blocks is also where I started to get a little more into it. My play group consisted of my cousins, a couple of them, and a couple of our mutual friends, but did some fun degenerate stuff with that. I think my first break was like Odyssey. I didn't play any of the Odyssey, Onslaught, Mirrodin, or Kamigawa blocks. I don't really remember why I quit playing. I just kind of stopped. Came back for Ravnica and Time Spiral, and then I took another break around the Shadowmoor, Lorwyn stuff, and I didn't really get back in until actually the return to Ravnica. Looks like Ravnica is kind of when I pop back into the game.
I feel a lot of people are that way, because I have a lot of friends, like another member of our in-person group, Ryan, you know, who's we keep asking to join us and play Magic with us online, but just won't because apparently he hates us. He also came back around Ravnica as well, as his kind of entry point. So Ravnica, I guess, was a turning point for a lot.
Then there was a period of time where I sold all my cards because I'm like, yeah, I'm actually done with this for real this time. Obviously, I'm in a podcast about Magic, so that was not a true statement. it was when I joined the military. I was like, no, I'm not going to have time for this. And then I have never met more nerds than I did in the military. I have never been exposed to as much talking about Pokemon and stuff before that. It was kind of weird. But there we go. And now I'm back. I play Magic.
So as I left off with my story, the first time I really took a long break from Magic was during the Urza Saga block. That was those were the times. So my first deck that I built that was like my deck was a... At the time, we didn't even have the word Naya. I just called it my green, red, white deck, the entire job of which was to try to ramp out Verdant Force as fast as possible and then win off of the back of a Verdant Force every turn. Did not go very well when my opponents were turn zeroing me with Tolarian Academy combos. So I saw the big difference in power and just said, no, I'm done. I came back for the first time towards the end of Onslaught block, so around Scourge. I remember some of my friends buying a box of Scourge and cracking packs, and I was just like, wow, there's a lot of packs here. You guys must really like Magic. I played through Scourge, Mirrodin block, and through the first Champions of Kawagama set, then took another break and wound up coming back during the Return to Mirrodin with Scars of Mirrodin, and then up through New Phyrexia, and I've kind of been back ever since. Now,
so
it was around...
Are there any...
Go ahead, Alex, go ahead.
Like, are there any moments that kind of stick out to you, like, through the play history? Because I'm thinking back as we talk about this. Like, I remember opening Ixidor for the first time, and I have a memory of just going, and this is right after the Kamigawa block in the first Ravnica set, and I remember there was just a card drop. It didn't last long. It had to have been only open for 6 or 7 months, and my mom took me in and bought me a booster box, and she's like, I'm gonna go run some errands, you stay here, whatever. And I was just opening my box of Ravnica. I remember this guy sitting down next to me, and I, at the time, I didn't know the value of Shocklands. I'd opened a few of them with the, you know, the nicer art, and I ended up trading a bunch of them away for some nonsensical stuff. The one thing I did manage to pick up from that entire exchange was an Umezawa's Jite, which, you know, seemed really cool. I could totally play it in the tabletop with friends. That seemed awesome. And strangely enough, another card that I've kept with me for sentimental value is my Dovescape, also came from around that time frame as well.
Good old Dovescape. So you ask if there's any other cards from our past that stand out to us?
Yeah.
I don't know. What about you, Jake? What do you any sentimental cards?
So let's see. Maybe not specific cards, but I do have a couple similar-ish memories. I know that my little play group, we would have whole tournaments every once in a while, which is really just us getting together and playing Magic like we did anyway. But we would all like throw a booster pack in for the prize pool or something like that. And one of the guys, my cousin, actually brought the Prosper Bloom deck in.
Oh, Prosper Bloom.
That was beautiful and amazing, and I loved it. So that was one of my first times of seeing like a good deck.
It was the first proper combo deck.
And then I know Stronghold. I bought a booster box, but I wasn't able to open it after I got it because I had to go out to dinner with my family, and we went to IHOP, and I hated it because I just wanted to go open my Magic cards, and it just felt like we were there for 5 hours. I still can't really eat at IHOP without feeling anxious now. It's kind of weird.
So what cards, I guess, from those sets, are there any of them that are, like, sentimental to you?
There was, at one point, we all made basically the same deck. It was like a, I don't know, it was a mess. But it had Breeding Pits and Keldon Warlord and Thalids. So our games would go, like, 50 turns or something, and I don't know how we didn't deck ourselves, because like we wouldn't attack or anything. It was just how many tokens can we make and how big can our Maroxxus of Keld get, and it was dumb, but we all had like the exact same decks and we loved them.
Were you playing multiplayer at the time?
Sometimes, like, we would just do I don't know, just playing Magic with multiple people in there. We didn't have like any kind of format names there. We did eventually figure out Emperor. I think that was in Quest or Scryer magazine or something like that. We played some Emperor games, and that was always a horrendous mess, but we kept doing it because we hated ourselves, I guess.
So once upon a time, there were these things called magazines that existed outside of the waiting room of your doctor's and dentist's offices. And these magazines were something called periodicals, because they would come out periodically, sometimes once a month, sometimes once a quarter. And they would feature articles on how you could learn about new decks, how you could get tournament reports, how you could find out about new cards, or, most importantly, you could get a price guide. Since these were only coming out like once a month, it was often a real crapshoot as to the actual legitimacy of some of those values, but at least gave us something to use when we were trying to do trades at the time. I remember my argument was I really liked Inquest for the articles, but Scry was what you should have been using if you're going to be doing any trades for prices, because I thought they had a much better approach to the value of cards, obviously.
I didn't track anything magic-wise like that, but I had my Beckett's Pokemon collector back when I played Pokemon, and that's what I used for with the articles, the new decks, and the pricing collector's guides on the back. But you can't talk about those periodicals and stuff like that without mentioning the promo cards that they came with sometimes.
Real quick, while we're still on the topic, I found a scan of Inquest number 1, and it does have the price guide in here. So a beta Black Lotus is listed as $175, which is nice. I always enjoy looking back at these. Like, I remember seeing dual lands in the case at the store for $10. I'm like, why would anybody pay $10? And that's what they're featured in here. These beta duels, according to Inquest number 1, are all $10, except for
Underground
Plateau? City. No, Plateau is the expensive one at 11. I don't know. Go figure. It's probably, that is the cheapest one right now. But yeah, Beta Duels, $10. Just go back to 1995.
And, you know, just drop $100 and get yourself up.
Yes. So if you guys could go back and tell your young Magic playing self, don't make this stupid mistake. What would be the stupid mistake you would tell your Magic-playing younger self not to make? Because mine would be, listen, you see that royal assassin over there in the case? That's not the one you should be saving up your pennies for. Look just slightly to the left of it, and you'll see Tropical Island sitting right there. Pick up a couple of those instead of saving your pennies for a royal assassin. Royal assassin, in spite of what you think, young John, is not able to control multiple different players and prevent them all from attacking you, because it doesn't get to tap to destroy all tapped creatures. It's only one, actually.
Yes, reading the card explains the card. I would have told myself to buy more copies of that Harper Prism Arena book. That's the one where you had the mail-in for Mana Crypt. And I did do that, actually. I had all of the Harper Prism magic novels and mailed in the little page in the back of them. So I got all of those collectible cards. They were all garbage except for Mana Crypt. There's like Sewers of Stark, which is just bad, and Arena and Giant Badger or something. I think it's the same idea with learning magic in general, is once you realize how important mana bases are, that's something that you can always invest in. Like even on Arena these days, if you spend your wild cards on the rare lands, it lets you play multiple decks.
Yeah, it'd be the same for me. It's like, hey, I know you're saving up for a lot and those creatures look cool, but see, those lands over there, those are the ones. Because I had two same memories going to the card shop, seeing these dual lands, not making any sense of it, but there's a really cool dragon over there, and I want it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I traded a Force of Will for a bunch of Thalids at one point.
So, what kind of decks were you playing back in the day? Before we had Commander, when we were playing with 60-card Magic, what kind of decks were you playing?
Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, I was just thinking about it. So I guess it's what's called Type 2 now? What became Modern? Was it Type 2?
So Type 2 was Standard.
Type 2 was Standard. So, okay, yeah, before all the formats had their Modern names, there was Type 2 is Standard, Type 1 was Vintage, Type 1.5 was Legacy?
Extended?
No, 1.x was Extended.
I think it was
because that was stupid.
Okay, and then 1.5 was Legacy.
And they just, it's basically the same rules as today. Extended is kind of like what Modern... Not really. Extended
it was fast standard.
Yeah, it was basically like a super standard. It still rotated. It just didn't rotate as fast as standard, so it had more sets in it.
So it was Type 2 and Extended for me. And the first actual, like, legitimate deck I put together, I priced for a little bit, and I guess maybe kind of falls in my period of when I stopped playing Magic, because I wasn't actively playing. I wanted to start playing again, so I started looking around for stuff. And then I put a deck together, and then I bought all the cards, and they came and they got them in the mail, back when eBay was the most prominent way to get cards. And then I never actually played, so I built this deck, and it was a Naya Zoo, back when that happened. So I had my my play set of Wild Nacatls and Curd Apes and Loam Lions, and then I remember scouring eBay for decent prices on Knights of the Reliquary and Rumbling Ravine, which at the time was like $20 a piece, which is random. Considering it. But yeah, so I built this whole Naya Zoo deck back then, and I put it together, and I did absolutely nothing with it. It just sat. But it felt good. I accomplished that. That was the thing that happened.
What about you, Jake?
I think one of the first, like, real decks I put together was the Type 2 Fires of Yavimaya deck back during the Invasion block. So it was a red-green aggro deck. It used the Fires of Yavimaya enchantment that gave all your creatures haste, Blastoderm, and Sapperling Burst, I think. So basically it would just make a bunch of big, dumb, hasty creatures. The formats we mostly played in my group, it would just be kitchen table, really, because like we had some older cards. Like most of us had a copy of Demonic Tutor and Soul Ring and stuff, and like you obviously can't play those in the majority of the formats at the time. But we wanted to play with them because we had those cards. So we would just kind of cobble together big piles of garbage and play with those. And it was fun.
Those were the good old days. I think the first deck that I built, kind of like from a list, was I actually did build the Prosperous Bloom deck during Mirage Visions, Weatherlight, Tempest. It was probably too little too late at that point to actually be any good, and I did not have four of the most important cards for the deck, but I tried to build that thing, and it was a lot of fun. I did not try to build a proper deck again for a long time. But I did try my hand at brewing weird decks even before discovering Commander, as during the original Mirrodin block, there, Mirrodin and Kawigama, I had built a deck that was a green-blue control-style deck that used Isochron Scepter with the arcane version of Boomerang or Unsummon. I don't remember what the heck the name of the card was. But I would use that and combine it with a splice onto arcane mill spell. And I would protect the entire combo by the card I'd be trying to bounce. If I didn't have anything my opponent's cards to bounce, would be my own Eternal Witnesses. So I had a pile of Eternal Witnesses before they really became a thing. So the deck would just very slowly mill people out while stalling the board with Eternal Witnesses that buy back any cards you did manage to get rid of. It was slow. It was janky.
It was John.
Oh God.
So what was the first deck that was you?
Something that I blocked out. I did at one point have a blue-white misery deck, and it used Kismet and Stasis and Chronotog. So basically everything that they played would come in tapped, and there would never be an untapped step, and I would just skip all my turns with Chronotog. So it was literally watching them draw one card a turn, not be able to do anything ever. And I feel really bad for that now, so sorry, everybody that I played with.
So did any of you really play other, like, formats, like, you know, for an extended amount of time aside from Commander? Like, I dabbled in Legacy, and I played for about a year and a half, 2 years. And, I mean, that's more time I spent in that than I spent in any other format, Legacy or Modern, Standard, anything of that.
I played a little bit of Legacy. We did a lot of Sealed, because... I guess our group was just convinced that we were too dumb to draft, so we just did Sealed, which was fun. It was a little more expensive because you had to, at the time, buy a starter deck and two boosters to do Sealed instead of six booster packs like it is now. I do want to talk about one format that we played. This is definitely pre-Commander. I actually don't know if you guys have heard of it. It was called Type 4 or Limited Infinity.
You've told me about this. I don't remember how it works.
Okay, so I don't think this really ever caught on with anybody outside of my playgroup. You'll see rarely people mention it online. But it was... tell me if some of this stuff sounds familiar. So it is primarily a multiplayer thing. You have a set of cards that you will draft between the players to build your deck. And then you'll sit down and play a multiplayer game of, like, free-for-all. So it had lots of elements of Cube before Cube was, like,
Commander
a thing.
Commander Cube.
Basically, yeah. The stipulation is that there's not any lands. You don't play with lands because, you could, but you have access to infinite mana at all times. But there's also a rule that you can only play one spell per turn. So there's effectively an Arcane Laboratory.
Okay, so one spell per turn, you said.
Yes.
All okay. The mana in the world, but only a finite number of things you can do with it.
Yep. So, like, obviously you go, okay, well, just pick a fireball and kill the table.
Yeah.
But since it was a curated pile of cards, you would intentionally not put those in there. So you would have some outlets for infinite mana, but it wouldn't be, like, outright win the game type of stuff. Like, a lot of the guild mages were pretty popular at the time. Yeah, so it was just really fun. It was a little cube multiplayer thing that let a lot of the traditionally bad casual cards be actually good, which is a lot of overlap with the early days of Commander.
Yeah. So outside of Standard, I did not really get to play any other formats until much, much later. I remember the group that I came back to Magic with around the Scars of Mirrodin block, I was getting a little bit frustrated at, like, you guys have, like, four soul rings in your deck. I don't have any of those. Can we maybe, like, pick a format? Like, do you guys want to do Legacy, or do you want to do Standard? Because Modern wasn't a thing yet. And just, like, say, why don't we just, like, pick a ban list or something and use that, so that way we can have things that are a little bit more balanced with each other. never wound up catching on. We did come up with our own format, which was incredible. And this format was called Spider President.
Of course it was.
What?
So Spider President. Spider President started out with a 6-player free-for-all for the first game. We called this the election phase. So during Spider President Phase 1, all the players would play in a free-for-all. The winner of that game then got to select one deck from each of his opponents. Ideally, each player had multiple decks. They could be the deck the person played the first game. They could be any deck in that player's collection. Then, the newly elected Spider President would have to face off against all 5 opponents during the second round, playing 5 decks at the same time.
What?
There was never a successful victory by the hands of the Spider President. Even playing the most powerful decks in our group, the Spider President would always wind up being defeated during the second phase of Spider President. This format, needless to say, did not catch on.
This is so you.
Yeah. Like, oh no, I had nothing to do with creating this thing. This thing was created by my current DM.
Anybody else, I would have been surprised that you said, "Oh, Spider President, sure." That's John telling this story, so it makes significantly more sense.
Oh, it made no sense.
No, whatsoever. It doesn't, John.
But that did lead us around that time to discover the format that all of us now have kind of made our favorite format of Commander. So I discovered Commander a couple of months before Wizards announced they were going to be releasing the first Commander 2011 decks. We had been playing since probably the winter before. One of my friends said, "Hey, this could be a pretty cool format. You take a legendary creature, you can play it at any time, but you have to build decks that share a color with it." And my first Commander deck was an awful, awful Marunar deck, where I literally went to my box of commons, found all of my black cards, put every rat I owned in the deck, and then a bunch of discard spells and other terrible effects. And that was the first Commander deck I built. So how did you guys get into Commander?
So I was, this is right around Return to Ravnica, and I had just moved to North Carolina from Florida. And I just, you know, I was up there, I was working, I wasn't really doing much else. But I was getting back into just enjoying Magic because of the artwork and stuff of that. And I had, you know, familiarities with the original Ravnica sets. So I was like, Return to Ravnica, it seems good. So I would go to this, you know, hobby shop that I used to, or my local game store called Atomic Empire. Shout out to them if any of them are listening to this, because it's a wonderful environment and store. And I'd went out there and I would just go and I'd buy cards and then I would leave. And a gentleman that worked there at the time, his name was John, you know, funny enough, told me that he wasn't going to sell me any more singles if I didn't actually start playing with people. And he introduced... He's like, "Man, you buy all these cards, we don't play. It's like, you need to play with some of these people." So he walked me over and introduced me to what would eventually end up being a very good and close group of my friends up there. My friends Hayes and Bill. And he's like, "Yeah, so they're playing EDH. You know, they can teach a bit more about it. Seems like something you might like. But yeah, you need to play something here, else I'm not going to keep selling you cards." So I sat down and they told me a bit about it, and then I immediately fell in love with the format, developed some really strong friendships there, and that is actually how my Rise of the Redeemed deck came into being as my first Commander.
Nice. What about you, Jake?
Oh man, I was trying to remember where I actually heard about it. It was definitely back when it was called Elder Dragon Highlander. Yep. It was before the precons were out. Well, I mean, obviously that's when they changed the name of it. I can't remember where I came across the format, though, honestly. I do know my first deck was built also out of just cards that I had sitting around. Back in the day, legends were much more infrequent, so mm-hmm. my pool of legendary, well, summon legends was very, very hard to get anything good out of. So I made a Kesa deck. It's the...
The mono green legend from Alliances. Yes.
So for 5 mana, you got this great deal of a 2/3 elf druid. And green creatures you control get +1/+1. But it does have Rebecca Gayheart, so that was cool.
Yes. I mean, the art on that card was pretty awesome. Not a good card, but yeah, that's definitely a starting point. So then the Commander 2011 decks came out. I was playing at the time. Jake was playing at the time. So Jake, did you pick up any of the Commander 2011 decks?
I did. Actually, starting from when they first came out, I picked up every single precon that was released every year for a long time.
Which was the first one you picked up? Because I remember mine. I picked up Das Mimeoplasma. So the green, blue, black precon was the first one that I picked up. And the Mimeoplasm was a terror in our group for several years.
I think I got them all at the same time, but out of the original batch, the one I liked the most was Gave, Guru of the Spores.
Okay.
Because I guess Saprolings and tokens and crap.
Combos with Gave?
Yeah. No, at the time, I was still very much not in favor of combos in my commander decks. I just wanted to play some nice fair magic of swinging creatures around.
So I think mine was... I thought mine was Frailes. It turns out I got the O's wrong. My first one was actually Marath, Will of the Wild.
All right, so that was 2013,
yeah.
I believe. Yeah, I started out buying the Mimeoplasm deck and then just slowly bought all of them. And then when Commander 2013 came out, I just bought all of them. And was like that for a while.
Yeah, I'm still... The only thing... I think last year... Not last year. The year before that was the only one I didn't buy all the sets off the bat. The one where Son of Yawgmoth was printed. Whatever year that was. 2 years ago?
So that was 2000...
18. It's the only 18? Year I didn't buy that. And, which is weird, because that's, you know, the one year that, you know, Dockside Extortionist, you know, became a thing.
No, that was 2019 then. That was 2019. I'm a little not with it at the moment.
Yeah, I stopped picking up the full sets in 2017, it looks like, and just buying singles from them instead. Because I wound up getting in the habit of, I would get the decks, I would play them like once or twice, then I would just take them apart, and then 98 of the cards in each of the decks I would never want to use again. So I just bought singles.
So that's how we got into Commander. So where are we now with Commander? So Alex, what are your favorite colors now that you've played the format for a while and let it shape you and you shape it?
I think in successive order, it probably goes green predominantly to nobody's surprise. White, mm-hmm. Red, blue, then black.
All right, Jake?
Black.
Black a second time.
yeah, I guess predominantly black, and then green, blue, red are actually all kind of similar. Yes, red has creeped up a lot. I do love Deflecting mm-hmm. SWAT and Dockside. I think it's stupid, but I love them. And then I guess there's a fifth color, but I don't remember what it is.
I don't actually know how I would currently rank my colors. Green is probably number one.
Really? I would have actually
blue
said
white. White. So I kind of look at it as like maybe green has a slight edge over the other colors. I don't know what number two would be. They honestly all probably just sit right around next to each other. Not in terms of power. White is still just like in the dumper. But I still just enjoy playing with weird cards. And white, being a not very deep color, kind of lends itself to that. After looking at like the colors, which Ravnica guild, which two-color pair do you identify with? Alex, why don't we start with you?
For me, it's a coin flip between Selesnya or Simic. More than likely Selesnya.
Okay, so both
yeah,
green-based.
I mean, I'm not denying who I am. More than likely, it's probably Selesnya.
Probably Golgari, followed closely by Dimir.
Okay. I am probably somewhere between Golgari and Orzhov. I really do like me some Orzhov fun, and grinding value out is, surprise, something I enjoy doing, which is why I probably identify in terms of three color pairs with Abzan the most. What about you guys?
I mean, that's probably where I would be too, would be Abzan.
Out of three colors. Jake?
It's, Sultai. just mush the guilds together.
Yeah, and then 4-color and 5-color, that just kind of turns into a mess. So I don't think we need to go deeper into those. So what kind of, I guess, what kind of like deck themes do you guys enjoy?
Well, have you guys heard of Tribal?
Yes. And someday we are going to, so we had recorded a Tribal episode, but my ability to audio engineer is much worse than I thought. So trying to recover that was not successful. I promise you, we will make that episode happen. You will get to hear Alex just beam for an hour about all things Tribal. What about you, Jake?
I mean, I definitely like to skew toward the competitive edge of decks usually. And I do like the ones that are more, I'm blanking on words because I've also had a long week. Not aggressive, but proactive. I'm looking for proactive, yes.
Okay.
I enjoy playing those a little bit more than the like mid-range grindy types of decks, because I just like to make people answer, and if they don't, I like the game to be over and shuffle up for another one.
The good old focus
mid-range
strategy.
Mid-range grind is where John and I live. That's our neighborhood.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I do love value. I do love graveyard decks. I mean, my currently 1, 2, 3 scrap trawler decks that I have assembled may speak to that a little bit.
On that on that same episode, if we ever get a chance to re-record it and listen to it for the Tribals, I made a bold statement during that one, saying that the best all-around support color to add to any primary color is white. And I stand by that, saying, at least in your case, John, because when you said, hey, I'd be surprised if it was white, almost all of your decks in some capacity have white in them, and that just lends itself to white is a fantastic support color, a horrible primary color.
I can see that. Now, are there any particular, strategies or deck themes that you don't like in Commander?
I do not enjoy playing with or against group hug or chaos decks. I prefer decks to have...
Why is that?
Well, I want a deck to have a dedicated win condition. I want them to try to play Magic to win. You can have fun while doing that. I just don't like trying to turn it into a let's sit here and do nothing that can accomplish a goal. I just find those games to drag out and not be fun.
That's fair. All right. Alex, what about you?
There are some of the group hug decks, at least the ones I've played against in the past, which are all about, hey, group hug in the sense that everybody's going to have more resource than they know what to do with, so it accelerates the game in that one. It'd probably have to be chaos or Wincomless Prison decks. Not going to go into names on this one, John, but we have a... we have a friend, an acquaintance, more so, that was fond of building both prison and chaos decks with no win cons. Like, literally, was the point. It was just the way to win is to make the table scoop.
Yeah, that's... I like chaos. I like group hug, but they really... I have to agree with you guys. They have to have some kind of a goal to win the game. When the assumption is not we are all trying to play to win the game, that is when just the balance of the game does not function. And it leads to some weird scenarios that are just not really fun. I would echo those sentiments.
Or just scenarios that puts people in a place where, you know, they have to essentially... any deck that forces another player to play Kingmaker is another one that falls in that category, I think.
Yeah. And I know, Jake, you complained about that too, just not being your idea of fun.
Yeah. Magic is inherently a competitive game in that you are... There's only one winner in a game, so you are trying to be that winner. So I prefer it to be me if I'm playing a deck. Like, I don't want to make someone else win the game.
All right. And are there any other, while we're still on the topic of Commander, are there any other Commander content creators who you guys enjoy, who you don't think get enough love? I mean, pretty much everybody has probably at this point heard of The Professor with Tolarian Community College and Josh and Jimmy with The Command Zone. Are there any content creators out there who you guys really like? I'll start us out. I have really enjoyed some of the gameplay that has come out of a couple of smaller groups, like Casually Competitive, have been putting out decks that are optimized, and they're kind of sub-CEDH in terms of power level, but definitely trying to do powerful things with less than CDH commanders or less than CDH lists while still running a lot of cards that are in that extremely high optimized power level. They are a hopefully fast-growing YouTube channel at this point, and their stuff has been really, really cool to watch.
Yeah, I mirror that as well, mainly because that's where I kind of want to live in terms of my decks as well. Because I have my competitive deck, you know, when I can actually get around to keeping it together. But I like more of the value and the mid-game and just the games that feel like that, because that's just, those are the sentiments and memories of I have when I first started playing Commander. So I don't mind sitting down and saying, hey, let's just go and jam competitive games. I can't imagine a world where that's all I played is just competitive either. So having a channel that supports content where they take, you know, fun casual ideas and take it to its absolute max without going to that competitive one is really solid. So I can't echo that sentiment more than like you have.
So there's like the spike feeders are pretty well known. But I do enjoy their stuff, mm-hmm. especially because they've been acting as like, I don't know, emissaries of CEDH, trying to present it as, mm-hmm. you know, human beings playing Magic and having fun. There's also, I really enjoy Play to Win, which is fairly recent. I think they started not even a year ago at this point. And it's just a couple dudes playing Magic. They play CEDH decks. And a lot of them are gameplay videos, but I really enjoy the presentation that they do, the formatting of that. So they're really cool to check out.
Now, are they the ones that have the cutaways?
Yeah, so they'll...
Where, like, they'll cut away mid-game, and then the creators will sit there and, like, talk about, like, okay, so, listen, the reason I did this was because at this point I was thinking this.
So they'll record the games, and then later on they'll have, usually two of them, will watch it and then record their commentary based off of that, and it just kind of cuts away from the game to their reactions, and it's also very lighthearted and... you know, bunch of friends having fun.
All right, so any closing thoughts on our experience so far with Commander before we start getting ready to get out of here today?
Be nice to play in person again.
Oh, God, I can't wait. I can't wait. I got so many decks.
And I got other people that aren't just the three of us plus, you know...
Plus the rest of our group.
Yeah, because it gets to the point where the decks are kind of just memorized already, and it kind of just like, great. You know, I'm let's play competitive. I'm playing, you know, right now I have Winota together. Like, I get to face down not one, but two consultation decks. Fantastic.
I could break out Keenan. Keenan doesn't have any way to consult. all right. So I guess that means it's time for our hot seat.
Yeah. What you got?
All right. So I got a hot seat question for us this time. So the most recent of the expert expansions with Zendikar Rising has brought us the party mechanic, and we are all D&D players. So the party mechanic, if anyone has not been following recent Magic news, every edition you're going to have a total of four potential members of your party, where if you have creatures which include the types of warrior, rogue, cleric, wizard, these are the four members of your party, and having a full party might get you a certain bonus, or it may reduce the cost of a spell or change the value of X in a spell. So it's pretty cool. It's a lot of fun and limited from what I've seen. But as you guys have mentioned, we are D&D players. And every edition of D&D brings us a new core class that winds up living in the player's handbook forever. Third edition brought us the monk. Fourth edition brought us the warlock. Fifth edition brought us the artificer. So we have a new set coming out this summer with our first trip to Forgotten Realms in Magic. If we add a fifth member to our party, which creature type would
easy.
It be?
It's super easy.
Fungus.
Hold
it would
on
be
to
a bard.
Bard from Alex.
It would be a bard,
okay.
Specifically.
Right. Well, we don't have any bards yet in the history of Magic. They have been rogues.
But I want a bard, like, either party type or subclass specifically, and I want them to have the bolster mechanic from the cons block.
Alright, Jake, what do you got?
Yikes.
What would be our fifth class?
So it needs to be like an existing Magic class.
Or an existing D&D class that we could pull somewhere from Magic's history.
I think a good fit would be like something that reflects the not wizard type of magic user. So there's a lot of shamans in magic. There's not actually a shaman D&D class that I'm aware of, in the core books at least. So maybe warlock could work, because there's a couple warlocks now in magic. I don't know, just something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Druid, that's another thing.
Yeah, druid. That was kind of where my head was going, druid or monk or something like that. Because I think the only named bards we have Yisan in magic so far have been rogues. Yeah, like Yisan is a rogue.
Yeah, should be a bard.
Yeah, but I also kind of hate the splintering of creature
like
types.
Like warriors and soldiers.
And knights. And,
yeah, where it's like, these guys should be... Yeah. These guys should all be buddies. The broader the creature type, the more chances we get to do tribal ridiculousness. Like, I remember being really upset during Khans of Tarkir block when the Nagas were Nagas,
yeah, that's really
and not snakes. Well, I guess we should probably leave it at that for now before we go on and reinvent the entire Grand Creature Type Update 3.0.
Bards. Bards for life.
Everything is now a bard.
Nope, it's a mix between the dauntless or the bolster mechanic and the level up mechanic, like some bastardization of those two.
So we would have +1/+1 counters and level counters on a creature. Alex, you're a bad person. You should
no
feel
bad.
Bad
person says, hey, you are a bard, and whenever bards enter the play, or whenever you play a bard, and when it enters the battlefield end or levels up, creatures you control gain banding until end of turn. Bards and bands. Now I should feel bad.
All right, get out. Get out. You're fired from the podcast. You're fired from the podcast.
No, forever. Okay, banding aside, you have your bards that start off as like little minstrels and eventually get better, and as they level up, their effects impact the party differently in the way of buffs. Just saying. It could be there without banding. Or with banding, who knows?
All right, before Jake and I are going to strangle Alex and toss his body in a river, we should probably call it an episode. We hope you've enjoyed this trip down memory lane. If anyone has found anything nostalgic, the first time you were introduced to Commander or Magic, the first rare you opened, the first deck you built, get at us on Twitter. You can find us in the... our email address is gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. So, until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
I'm Jake.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.